Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Evan Brand. Today is an interview I did with my friend, Dr. Eric. He's a thyroid expert who's been around for a while. I went on his podcast probably 7 years ago, 6 years ago, the way time flies. We finally got back together, and now today we're talking about the mold-thyroid connection. Here's this domino effect that I've discovered clinically. You get exposed to a water damaged building, and that could be a $3 million house. I've been inside of a home, $4.5 million, and it's full of mold. It would blow your mind, the stuff you see. Just because something's more expensive does not mean it's not moldy. Let me tell you about that. So here's the thing. You get exposed to the moldy building. You breathe in these mycotoxins. It suppresses the immune system. Then you develop bacterial overgrowth and candida problems. Those then rob you of your nutrients. So then you become tired. You have issues with brain chemistry. So you develop depression, anxiety, fatigue, joint issues, sleep problems, hormone issues, low sex drive, etc. And then it turns into this massive issue in the family where you're the troublesome husband, the troublesome wife because of your issues. And I see marriages fall apart because of this stuff. Now, could you have thyroid issues in the mix? Yeah, absolutely. When you have gut dysbiosis and you develop bacterial overgrowth, so for example, Klebsiella, we know that bacteria can trigger Hashimoto's, that's autoimmune thyroid. Now your gut bugs are driving thyroid issues. So if you just go to your thyroid doctor, they're not going to put all these puzzle pieces together. And that's what I personally do in the clinic, is I gather the proper data by doing the proper functional medicine lab testing. And then we take all that data and we put it together into an efficient and effective protocol to chip away at all of these problems one by one. And I've done this over 3,000 times now. I have over 1,200 students in my Functional Academy of Medicine and Epigenetics. And actually, today is the last day. Today is Friday, September 8th, 2023. Today is the last day of the sale price. I never, ever do sales on my courses because they're truly worth more than even the full enrollment price of the curriculum. However, I had a labor coupon. So labor, like Labor Day, I had a labor coupon that was effective for $500 off enrollment of my Better Belly course. So if you want to take advantage of the only sale that I've done outside of a couple of the promotions, but it'll probably be the only sale of the year. So if you want to learn this stuff, you want to expand your personal knowledge, you want to expand your clinical knowledge, and learn these tests, how to do them, how to run them, how to interpret them, how to make protocols to fix your own health issues, no matter if that's a joint, sleep, mood, skin, etc. Even though it's called Better Belly, it teaches you much more. So you can go to evanbrand.com/labor. evanbrand.com/labor. That'll take you to the enrollment page where the coupon code is automatically applied. So take advantage of that ASAP. If you're late, maybe we'll let you in at the discount price, but hurry up because this is truly an incredible offer. Without further ado, though, let's get into the podcast. If you need help clinically, evanbrand.com, you can still book a 15-minute free call with me. And then auraroots.com, that is my supplement company. It's all professional quality. If you want to start taking your health to the next level, the electrolytes are an amazing bestseller all summer. My grass-fed organs, you can't beat. Many, many other products like my adaptogen tonic. If you're stressed, if you're frazzled, if you're anxious, if you need help, you feel like life's beating you down, get some of the adaptogen tonic in your system. I guarantee you'll feel better. It's primarily Eleuthero and some others. I know you'll feel good. All right, let's have some fun.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Evan. Appreciate you being here.
Oh, man. Thanks for having me. I was looking back because I had you on my podcast. It was 6 years ago, 2017.
Oh, wow. Wow, that long. Yeah. So again, it's great to have you now on my podcast. I know you're going to share a wealth of information with the listeners. And let's give a little bit of your background for those who aren't familiar with you. How did you start doing what you're doing today and, you know, get to the point where you have one of the top podcasts out there in health?
Yeah, well, the podcast was really just a way for me to learn, right? I mean, I was kind of in it for myself in the beginning because it was very difficult to reach some of these practitioners, naturopaths and functional medicine people that knew a lot. It was really difficult. You'd have to fly to their clinic or you'd have to pay, you know, $500 to $1,000 an hour to get a hold of these people. And I thought, well, What if I just start interviewing them and I can get information from them to help myself? Well, then as I started to get better, I thought, well, hey, other people need these pieces of advice, these pieces of information, and practitioners are booked. People are booked out. So why don't I start helping people? So I had personal training certifications at the time, and then I went into Nutritional Therapy Association and picked up the FNTP credential, which taught me food as medicine. And also I learned a lot of hands-on things that I ended up using in a brick and mortar practice. So I actually worked out of a chiropractic physician's office for a while, and I started getting his patients so healthy that they didn't need an adjustment every week. So that was a natural parting of the ways there. And I left the brick and mortar and went full-time online with my practice in 2015. And at the time, it was the Wild West. Nobody was really doing online telemedicine in 2015. I know that sounds like yesterday, but in the internet world, that was a long time ago. And it was a new idea. People were like, wait a second, you know, I can stay here in Oregon or Idaho or California, and you're going to send test kits to my house? Like, that was kind of odd. But I guess I was ahead of my time there, because now a lot of the practitioners that reach out to me for coaching, I do a lot of doctor and business coaching nowadays, and I'm coaching these people to convert their brick and mortars. Like, I had a guy in the middle of California, Beverly Hills, 70-something-year-old doctor, a conventional MD. He's been practicing for like 35 years. And now, you know, we've taken this guy from 25 employees and $40,000 a month in rent for his, you know, Beverly Hills office to now he's just online. He's got like 2 employees and he's happier than he's ever been. So my joy and love now is helping other practitioners, but also I still do clinical work 3 days a week. And so I'll have people from California to, like yesterday, Australia, South Africa, all across Europe, you know, people that are just seeking answers that they can't find locally. People that have been to 5, 10, 20 different doctors, and they call me as the last effort, the last hoorah. And usually we uncover things that have never been uncovered before. So it's a true blessing.
All right. That is a awesome story. And that's also funny about with the working for a chiropractor and then just getting people better to the point where they didn't need weekly adjustments. So being a fellow chiropractor, I can understand maybe the chiropractors in the practice not being too happy about that. But obviously, that's good. That's what you want. You don't want someone to come in on a weekly or coming in 2-3 times a week for many, many weeks, many, many months.
Yeah, it was funny how it worked out. You know, I think a lot of it was probably adrenal issues. And then obviously nutrition was a big piece of it as well. I still implement a lot of nutritional therapy strategies, but these were people back in Kentucky where they're just eating garbage. You know, they'd come in with their big Polar Pop, which is just giant. I don't even know what it is, probably 64-ounce soda. And they'll put that down and put down their Oreos and then get adjusted and go right back to the bag of Doritos in their purse afterwards. You know, it was just a mess. So I encourage people that if you are in a brick and mortar practice like that, and maybe you do have a lot of hands-on skills, I would try to implement the things that we're talking about today, because you can increase their health and you can increase their outcome. So if you're worried about the financial piece of it, like, hey, well, what if I get everybody so well, you know, then they don't need adjustments every week? Well, now they're going to tell all their friends, their families, their brothers, their sisters, like, hey, this guy turned my life around. And so the referrals that you'll get will totally maximize your ability to help more, and you'll generate more revenue. If you're freaked out about, like, hey, I'm going to get people so well, there'll be nobody left to help, I promise that won't happen.
How long have you been helping people with mold, which is the topic, the mold gut thyroid connection? Because I know you recently started, or maybe it hasn't been recent. How long have you been speaking for Great Plains? Now they're Mosaic Diagnostics, I believe, but you've been lecturing for them. So how long of a focus have you had on mold issues?
Well, it started in, I guess it would have been 2017 or 2018. So my wife and I built a house, and it was on a crawl space foundation, which is a terrible idea. Don't do crawl spaces. Try to do a slab, or even a walkout basement would be better than a crawl space, because a crawl space is basically a basement that you can't see. You know, you're not down there to check on it. And so we built this new house, and I love trees. So I plant trees everywhere I move to. And we had this water hose connected to the house, and I was dumb. I was watering trees in the winter, and I thought I needed to, and I left the hose on and it froze. And then that busted what's called a Silcock valve in the crawl space. So we had some water in there, and that evaporates up into the home and creates mold. So I was having blood pressure issues and all sorts of problems. And my friend Jack Wolfson, he's a cardiologist. I texted him and I was like, hey, I'm having these weird blood pressure issues and I'm dizzy when I wake up. And he texted me back one word in all caps and said mold. So after that day, my life was never the same. And my wife and I were kind of reminiscing and laughing about it because, I mean, it's not funny because it put me through hell and we're still recovering. But when I went to investigate, I got stung by a wasp at the same time. So it's like I found the water and I got a wasp sting on my hand at the same time. And it was a whole cascade of symptoms. So I'd say 2018 is when it all started. And now you and I are recording here late summer 2023. I don't think I'm 100%. I don't know if you ever fully get 100% back from a mold incident because your immune system gets affected, your endocrine system gets affected, your GI system gets affected, your brain, specifically your limbic system, gets affected to where now you're stuck in fight or flight, whether you want to or not. You become more hypersensitive. So I had debilitating chemical sensitivity to all sorts of fragrances, laundry, dryer sheets. I'm still sensitive to it. Like if I'm around people, I don't like it. I want people to be fragrance free. It's better for your health and better for others, but I still react to it, but it's far, far less, maybe 90% less than it used to be.
Yes. So you're a lot better, not quite where you need to be. Or not quite. Well, like you said, you might not get to 100%. And I guess it's also a lesson for those listening who might be dealing with mold toxicity. This isn't a 3-month process. It's not a 6-month process. Or, I mean, well, let me ask you, can it be a 3 or 6 month process? Or is it something where no matter the case, it's probably going to be like a few years before you get to the point where, again, maybe not 100%, but maybe you're 95% or 98%?
Yeah, well, the fastest recovery was in a 3-year-old little boy. So we ran his organic acids test and he was colonized. And we also ran his mycotoxin profile. Do you post video or do you just post audio for your podcast?
Well, the podcast portion is just audio, but I do post this on YouTube. So if you share anything, we could do that.
Let's do it because pictures are 1,000 words, right? So I'll show you a case that kind of answers the question of timeline because many people are unrealistic with their expectations. So as you know, I love the oat test. It's amazing. This is a first morning urine sample that people run and you get it back to the lab. And when you have yeast or mold issues, you'll then spit off these organic acids. And so we can infer based on what we find in the urine, what's happening internally. So you can see here in this poor boy, this is a 3-year-old, by the way, 3-year-old little boy, mother had 5 children, ended up working on the whole family and mom. And they had tree roots that busted through the foundation in their home. And they had water that came into the basement. And they all had mold toxicity. So you can see here, this marker, 5-hydroxymethyl-2-ferroic. For the folks listening, we're just looking at these long words that indicate that this boy was growing and or he was colonized for Aspergillus, probably in the gut, but also the sinuses. And then arabinose was very high. So we knew he had a candida problem. Bacterial overgrowth was a mess. He had some clostridia, which we'll often see if you have mold. A lot of times you'll see mitochondrial issues too. So people with chronic fatigue, there's a massive link between mold and chronic fatigue. In his case, neurotransmitters were okay, but a lot of times you'll see low dopamine because ochratoxin, which is one of the most popular, most common mycotoxins we find, that affects the part of the brain that makes dopamine. So we'll often see issues with energy and drive and focus and concentration. In his case, he looked okay. Nutrient levels, we'll often see those crash out quite a bit. So this was in April of 21. So we put together a protocol and then we retested in April of 22. So just less than a year. And you can see we pretty much fixed everything. There's no more colonization, no more candida at all. Tiny bit of bacterial overgrowth on this one, but the clostridia was normalized. So that's about the fastest you can do it, in my opinion, would be a year. And it doesn't mean it's a year to feel better. It just means a year to really resolve it. And that would be really fast, especially if you've been sick for 20, 30, 40 years. People have to know and remember that if you had mold exposure when you were a kid and genetically you don't detox it well, and now you're listening to this and you're 52 years old and you want to get better in a year, that's unrealistic. You've had this stuff for 5 decades. You're not going to get it out in a year. I think it's important for the practitioner to kind of set realistic expectations of the timeline because we're so used to that conventional medicine model, right? You take antibiotics for a week and everything's better. And that's just not the case. And you're going to feel better gradually, though, sometimes within just a couple of weeks or a couple of months, using the right protocol, the proper binders, antifungals up the nose and in the gut, you can make significant progress with depression, fatigue, sleep issues, gut problems, etc.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I think you'd agree that probably all the cases you need to address the source of the mold, either get rid of the mold or remediate. But there are people who are not in a position to move. And I've come across patients, and I'm sure you've come across patients, clients who just, for whatever reason, they couldn't remediate. Maybe the spouse wasn't on board or for whatever. If that's the case, is there any hope of taking binders, doing things from a glutathione perspective, or do they really need to get rid of that source of the mold?
Yeah, great question. You know, it's always about, it's like a seesaw, right? I mean, if you've got a really big fat guy on one side and a skinny guy on the other, fat guy's always going to win the seesaw battle. And so if you take that analogy and you visualize that for the rate of detox as opposed to the rate of exposure, if you've got this massive exposure, your bathroom leaked, your kitchen leaked, whatever, your basement flooded, you have exposure off the charts, and you're just doing like a couple of capsules of charcoal per day, you're going to lose the battle. But if you kind of flip that, maybe you're able to remediate some of the issue. You can't fix the whole house, but you fix the big wet wall or the cabinet that flooded or whatever, and your rate of exposure is now lower than your rate of detox, then you win the game. And you can implement fresh air into the home. So if you have decent weather outside and you can open your windows and flood the place with fresh air and dilute the mycotoxins, that's obviously helpful. If you spend a lot of time outside and away from it, maybe you work outside the home, or maybe you have the ability to work out in the garden during the day and air the house out, like if you truly can't cut it out. But truthfully, cost-wise, it shouldn't be much. You know, some of these remediation companies, they'll charge you $10,000 plus. And you kind of have to be careful about vetting these people, because if they do mold testing and remediation, it's probably not a good idea because they're biased, right? They're, of course, they're going to say it's a problem and they need to remediate you. So I would try to find an independent tester that doesn't do remediation. But sheetrock is not expensive. So if there's wet drywall and baseboard, cut it out, put a new piece in, patch it up, paint it up, put your trim back on, you're done. So people get overwhelmed by this conversation because it's their personal home, it's their sacred space, it's their sanctuary. And people think that when they talk about mold, it means they're dirty. No, my house was pristine. I had air filters in every room. I had a whole house water filtration system. I mean, this is a top-notch house, and it was still moldy and still made me sick. So please, like, get rid of any brainwashing you have. Don't feel that you're dirty, or, you know, you're a messy person, or you're a nasty person if you have mold. This happens to the best of us. And I've seen houses that are $2, $3 million and they're moldy. And I've had clients in these million-dollar plus homes that are moldy. And yeah, you're right. It's the husband usually who's a skeptic, who's this online guy. And what does he know? And guess what? The wife continues to suffer. And then it affects their marriage because now she's exhausted. So she has no sex drive. So the husband's mad about that. It's like, dude, look, if you want a good sex life, fix the mold. If you use that as the carrot in front of them, then usually they'll get motivated enough. And the husband goes, oh, okay. All right, we'll fix it. If that means I can, you know, save my sex life, save my marriage. Unfortunately, our hedonistic, you know, human traits can't be ignored. But if you lean into that, usually you can get these people on board and they'll fix the home.
Now, you mentioned, which I agree, about hiring someone who maybe is not doing the remediation because they're more likely to find something that might not be there. But what do you think about doing it on your own? Like, there's companies like Micrometrics where people could just order the test and just basically do it on their own without hiring a specialist?
I love it. I think it's a great place to start. And I encourage almost every client I work with to do that. So yeah, if you're going to do like an ERMI or a HERTSME, these are where you basically go around and kind of grab a bunch of dust and send it back to the lab and see what shows up. You can do those. I prefer the Petri dishes. So these little plates that have almost like a gum resin on them where mold will start to grow. So these Petri dishes, you put them on the floor in various rooms of the home for an hour. You put the lid on, mark them, master bedroom, kitchen, living room, basement, attic, car. A lot of cars are moldy. Mercedes did a recall on 2.5 million cars because mold was growing in the air conditioning system. So even if you have a luxury car, it could be moldy. So if you drive somewhere and by the time you get to work, you have a headache, consider it's your car that's moldy. Could be a problem. So these Petri dishes are cheap. It's like $3. Or if you do it with a lab analysis, it's like $30 for a plate. And you get a health score. And then based on that score, we also like to see, well, what's in the home and does that match up to what's in the urine? 90% of the time, it does not match. Meaning that mold exposure was from years ago. That was the moldy college dorm. That was your previous house. That was your childhood home. That was your grandma's house that you hung out in. So it's rare that we find current exposure as the source. It still happens, but we often find that this is a story that started long ago, but we're just now getting the answers, just now getting the data.
So just to clarify, you're saying that someone might do a home test for mold or even have someone come to the house and test for mold, and it might be negative, yet they will show positive findings on either an oat test or a mycotoxins test?
Exactly. Yeah. And then they scratch their head and say, well, where the heck is this coming from? And I just tell them, look, it's probably a long time ago. Could have been years. Could have been months, years, decades. You never know. Or it could have been their office, right? If they work outside of the home and the office is a commercial building that's had water damage, something like that. So we try to find it, but sometimes we don't. Sometimes we don't find the source. So we just have to assume that it was from the past. You know, it's also been proven that mold toxin goes through the placenta. So this could even happen from birth. I've been fortunate to test many young children. Almost half my practice is children these days. And, you know, we see kids that are 6 months old and they're off the charts with mycotoxins, even though they're living in a new house or a new apartment or something, and they still have mold off the charts. And then we test the mom. And then the mom has the same mold toxins, but way higher. And we go, oh my God, look, we've just opened up the dam through the breast via the breast milk and or the placental transfer. And that's how we see it. Same with like flame retardants and stuff. I mean, unfortunately, breast milk is highly contaminated with various toxins. And so it's a big thing where we're seeing 1 and 2 year old children that have major gut issues, major skin issues. We're even seeing thyroid antibodies in young children. It's very difficult to get blood on them. But some cases when things are severe enough, we do. And we're seeing Hashimoto's in young kids. It's pretty nuts.
Yeah. When it comes to mold in children, do you treat them the same as far as like using binders and glutathione? Obviously, you try to get rid of the exposure, but the actual treatment, is it similar?
Yeah, protocol is the same. We just use a lot more liquid protocols than capsules. As you know, certain binders you have to open up and we can mix them in with juice or applesauce or something. So I'll try to find alternatives to the capsule formulas and we'll use liquid antimicrobials instead. We'll do some nasal sprays and such, and it works great. Kids get better faster. You know, their immune systems are generally more robust than us adults. Their thymus is much, much bigger. So they have this big immune reserve, if you will, that we don't. So it's a lot easier. And it definitely makes you look like a better practitioner when you're working with a kid, because you can get them better in, you know, half the time that it takes for an adult to get better generally.
And then, so you brought up an example of a patient's organic acids test, which showed mold. Let's say that everything was negative the first time you tested. Have you seen where the oat is negative, yet the urinary mycotoxins test is positive?
Yeah, that's a great point. So there's kind of two things that can happen. You can be colonized for mold, meaning you're a mold factory, so you're actually growing it. Maybe you had a lot of exposure, or the exposure was long, or your immune system was weakened. For example, maybe you had COVID, your immune system was weak, you then got exposed to mold and became colonized. So that's what we look at on the oat is, hey, are they actually growing it? Do we see on page 1 there, do we see these yeast and or fungal metabolites elevated, indicating they're currently growing mold? Or like you said, if that's all negative, but the mycotoxins are positive, then we assume they're just a mycotoxin reservoir. You know, that's the most accurate thing. Technically, it's not a mold. It's a mycotoxin that they're holding in them. It's the mold fart. That's the mycotoxin. And we see that all the time. So, you know, half the people are colonized, maybe half the people aren't. But you still have to work on the client and not just the paper, right? So if we see that there's gut issues and skin issues, maybe we run a stool test on them as well, and we see dysbiosis or other infections. Well, as you know, a lot of these herbs are pretty broad spectrum. So if I'm, let's say, working on parasites, I might have some herbs in that formula that also kill yeast and or fungus and or mold anyway. So even if the oat wasn't a big like smoking gun for mold colonization, we're probably helping to fix it anyway.
Yeah. So it sounds like you don't test everybody for urinary mycotoxins. Is that correct? Or
I do. If
you
can.
Do.
Yeah. If budget permits, I'm going to tell them, hey, at least initially for our first call together, when we first start out, I want everybody to have an oat and a myco. I'm just seeing too many to ignore it. Now, if budget doesn't permit, or if this person says, hey, I know I feel better on binders, I've already done this in the past, and I'll say, okay, fine. Like, if you don't care to see the numbers, these tests aren't perfect. They're good, but not perfect. So we'll just say, hey, look, if you're not wanting to spend the money, or you can't spend the money, and or you're already feeling good on binders, then just keep up binders. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. When I test, I can't say I test everybody for the urinary mycotoxin test, but when I do test for that, I typically use Great Plains, again, now known as Mosaic. But Have you had Dr. Neil Nathan on your podcast?
I haven't. He's not a fan of that, but I know he likes real time.
I was going to say, I think he uses both, right? I think it was him. Maybe it was someone else who uses real time and, you know, Great Plains Mosaic, just because sometimes I'll find the mycotoxins on one, but not the other.
Yeah, Vibrant. Vibrant is another competitor as well. I've used them before. And actually, Vibrant showed mycotoxins in me personally that I didn't see anywhere else. So I don't know what to make of it. But if you talk with Neil, he basically says binders for life. And I'm cool with that, because these things that we're using, zeolite, clay, silica, fulvic acid, chlorella, et cetera, you know, these are great for heavy metals and pesticides. And we're all exposed to that too, no matter how hard we try. And I love the idea of just keeping up with a little bit of low dose binders. So maybe your test missed something. Maybe your mycotoxin test wasn't perfect. I still do binders. It helps with the die-off too, for any gut infections and other issues we're working on, Lyme, Bartonella, Babesia, whatever we're doing there. The die-off from some of that stuff can be intense, and the binders help mop that up. Also, zeolite can help with histamine issues. So a lot of these people have histamine problems as well. So I really like to implement binders for everyone. Even if the test says there's nothing there, we're still going to use it and see what they report back. And if they say, hey, I'm sleeping better, which is my story, I started experimenting with binders before bed, and my wife and I both noticed, hey, we're sleeping better. This is cool. So then we started using it with our kids, and the kids slept better too. We're like, cool. So everyone needs binders at night. Done.
Okay. So everybody in the household's like taking low dose binders on a wellness basis then?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, my kids do. My wife and I do too. I do give or take a couple capsules a night. Sometimes I'll do them in the middle of the day too, if I feel kind of out of it. You know, sometimes I'll still experience some brain fog from it. When you're colonized with mold and or candida, a lot of people are going to have brain fog. So like you walk into the pantry, you forgot what you're looking for, or you forget your keys. Where's your phone? You're always losing something. Like that type of brain fog can happen a lot with candida too. So mold is really the bad guy that allows these other things to take place. So if you've been working on candida and bacteria and you're struggling and not beating that, it's like this relapsing type phenomenon. Assume that there's mold there, because candida rarely occurs in isolation. I did a summit on candida years ago, I guess 2017, and at the time I didn't know much about mold. And now that I look back, all these people that had all these candida problems, you know, we were using herbal antimicrobials and things to hit those herbal antifungals, and the candida would come back. I'm like, okay, well, let's just rotate herbs. And now I realize, well, crap, that was mold. Mold was allowing the candida to come back. Mold was giving candida the opportunity to thrive. And candida produces acetaldehyde, which is very similar to alcohol. So a lot of people just feel kind of drunk and spacey with candida, and that would get better temporarily, and then they'd relapse. So now I go back and I test those people, and they all have mold.
Wow. That's something that definitely is overlooked. And I don't know if you can answer this, but if you had to put a number on it, what percentage of clients that you see would you say have a mold problem? I'm sure it's high, because a lot of people now know you as a mold expert and see you. So I don't know. Again, yours might be higher than the average person. But if you had to guess and say the average household, maybe that doesn't see you, then would you say it's like 50%, 60%, 80%?
I'd say probably 90.
Wow.
It's huge. It's huge. I think it's the biggest epidemic facing the country, if not the world right now. And I know you've seen this too with your clinical work, that even in the last 5 years, the average person is sicker and more complex and more sensitive than ever before. Obviously, there's a lot of things that go into that, media and bioweapons and other things that kind of play into this. But overall, I find the population to be getting sicker, more sensitive, more nutrient depleted, more depleted of vitamins and minerals, and therefore this mold is really just the final dagger, if you will. So I would say it's probably 90%. It's very rare these days that I test someone and don't show up with something. Now, you're right. A lot of people are now saying, hey, I heard you talk about this. I had this exposure. I have 50 symptoms. Can you help? But they're still average guys. Like I actually had a case in California. This was just some real estate investor guy who said, hey, I feel pretty good, but I heard you and I want to get a good functional medicine workup and I don't have many complaints. I'm like, okay, fine. And we look at this guy's labs. He's colonized with mold. His mycotoxins were off the chart. I'm like, you're sure? You have no energy issues. You're not depressed. You're not anxious. You don't have erectile dysfunction. Your blood pressure's okay. And he's like, yep, I'm fine. I'm like, well, this is weird. but I don't want to ignore this because mycotoxins are very carcinogenic. So ochratoxin affects the brain and the kidneys. Things like aflatoxin can affect the liver and be a big, big driver of liver cancer. So I'm like, look, if we don't want you to end up with some neurodegenerative disease as you get older, then let's get this stuff out now. So we got this guy on the protocol and now he's losing body fat. So he was working with a personal trainer and he couldn't lose much body fat. Now he's leaning out. So we're seeing some cool benefits, even though he didn't really have many complaints. Now he's saying, oh, I'm not as tired at the end of the day. I thought that was just normal because I'm working hard. It's like, shouldn't really crash at 3 p.m. You should be able to keep going. So that's fun when you see a case where supposedly they're okay, but then you fix them anyway, and now all of a sudden they're better. That's always rewarding.
Yeah, that is a lot of fun when you see someone, just the life changes that they make in their health. So thyroid. So as you know, this is the Save My Thyroid podcast, and people want to know, how does mold affect the thyroid? Let's dive into the mold-gut-thyroid connection.
Sure. Well, I would say it's a domino effect, right? Like everything else. There's kind of this perfect storm that happens. Do I think that Hashimoto's and Graves and other thyroid issues can just kind of happen on their own with stress and that sort of thing? Maybe, but you know, the more I look at this, I really think of the thyroid issue as the effect, like the end result. And so here's the domino effects that I've seen. And so I'll just lay it out to you the way I kind of perceive it now. And you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it too, which is, I think step one is like there's some sort of trigger, if you will, like mold, for example. So let's just role play and say, okay, you had this mold exposure that weakened your immune system. And so now you developed candida overgrowth. And while the back door was open, so to speak, now you have developed Klebsiella, which we know is a big bacterial trigger of any sort of thyroid issue, autoimmune thyroid. So now you have Klebsiella and maybe you have Prevotella and Proteus. So now maybe you've got a diagnosis of RA and Hashimoto's or Graves, for example. You've got this multiple autoimmune thing happening. Now we see that you've got gut inflammation, the nutrition's off, you're super stressed, you're working too much, your kids are crazy, your marriage is on the rocks, like all those things add up, and then boom, you happen to test blood and hey, there's a big thyroid issue. But I think there's probably other things predating you seeing that manifestation there. So I've seen cases where we've seen antibodies like TPO antibodies in the thousands, like 2,000 or 3,000. And then we've seen that drop thousands of points just by fixing what I'm describing to you, the candida, the bacteria, the mold piece. All of a sudden, antibodies go way, 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 way down. And I didn't even give any, quote, thyroid support or thyroid protocol. Maybe I did like basic stuff, zinc, selenium, those kind of things. But it's actually rare that I have to make a full thyroid protocol. It's almost as if these other gut detox type protocols are actually helping the thyroid. It's almost like we're just removing the roadblocks that allowed the thyroid to be under attack in the first place.
Yeah, I agree. In most cases, it's not a thyroid problem. I mean, Graves and Hashimoto's, as you know, they're immune system conditions that affect the thyroid, and all these things you just mentioned, the molds, the candida overgrowth, the Klebsiella, you know, all these other mold, not a gut microbe, but all these factors can affect the gut, which you need a healthy gut to have a healthy immune system. And one thing I don't think either one of us mentioned is molds, also the mycotoxins can increase the permeability of the gut as well.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, there's some good literature on that. There's some good pictures. If you just put in like PubMed leaky gut or mycotoxin leaky gut, you can find it. But yeah, that's a great point, which is that these people that are so clean with their diet, they're confused. How could I have some autoimmune issue? I'm off gluten, I'm off dairy, I'm off grains. Like I'm doing the perfect diet that everyone tells me to do, this kind of autoimmune protocol, if you will, for diet, but yet their gut's still a mess. And that's exactly right. Not only do the lipopolysaccharides and the endotoxins from bacteria affect the gut barrier, but mold toxin does as well. So if you're taking all these leaky gut protocols, leaky gut supplements, but you're full of mold and mold toxin, you're not going to fully get better.
And what impact will moldy foods have? Because we focus more on the indoor air, but if someone's eating grains or nuts that are moldy on a regular basis, I would assume that also could prevent someone's gut from healing.
Yeah, I think this is tough to prove, but if I were to give you like a pie chart of exposure, I would say the biggest piece of the pie is probably 90% inhalation, because you breathe on average like 20,000 times a day versus you're eating in snacking maybe what, 3 to 5 times a day. So just your overall consumption, I think, is significantly less in the diet. It is true that you can have moldy coffee, moldy chocolate, moldy grains. For example, there's one study out of Guatemala, and apparently liver cancer is very high in Guatemala, and it was connected to moldy corn tortillas, which are a huge staple in the diet down there. So corn can be highly contaminated with various mycotoxins, and this also can affect fertility and create miscarriages and birth defects and other problems for females. So remember that, you know, we're talking gut thyroid here, but there's this big endocrine system effect as well, because a lot of mycotoxins are highly, highly estrogenic. So if you're having breast tenderness or other problems, female issues, hormone problems, PMS, and worse, that could also be a part of it. But I would say the diet is a smaller piece. I will say this is probably why some people feel better. Most people feel better on a grain-free or more paleo template, because they've already eliminated maybe some nuts, seeds, grains, and therefore they got rid of the mold. Like, you're not going to have a moldy steak. Now, the cows, if they're fed grain that's moldy, moldy corn that's sprayed with glyphosate and the GMO products are in the cow's diet, could that impact the quality of the meat? I would say so. I would still prefer people get pasture-raised meats if they can. But overall, you know, if you had to choose your battles and you had the option of living in a moldy home and eating clean, or living in a clean home and eating McDonald's, just a hamburger patty only with no bun and no cheese, I'd probably do that, because the buildings really wreck you far more.
All right. That's interesting. Obviously, you're not recommending for people McDonald's hamburger patties, but yeah, if they had to choose between being in that moldy environment and not eating as clean as you would normally recommend. So that does make sense. Now, I know you use natural binders, but what's your thoughts on cholestyramine? And I'm asking you for a reason, not just for the mold. I don't know if you know this, but cholestyramine could also bind to thyroid hormone. So it's actually used as a treatment for some people with hyperthyroidism. And this is in the literature, which I didn't know like years ago. I found it in the research. And then since then, I've had some patients get cholestyramine prescribed by the endocrinologist if they're unable to tolerate the antithyroid medication. And so it's not ideal, definitely not the first line of treatment, but I wanted to get your opinion, what you think of cholestyramine just in general, obviously, like in this situation for the binding of mycotoxins.
Sure. Yeah, that's cool. I didn't know that. I mean, it's a pretty remarkable compound. So folks listening that might not be familiar with it, it was created, I think it was sometime in the 60s or 70s. It was used as a cholesterol-lowering medication, but then statins came out, and I believe they work in a different mechanism than this. And so cholestyramine really just kind of fell off. Like, maybe there's not as much profit in it or something. I don't know what the story was of why it became just kind of this forgotten about product or compound. You can get it compounded from compounding pharmacies, which I have, and I've personally taken cholestyramine. I'll tell you this, though, and nobody's talking about this, and it's kind of frustrating, because if I would have had more warning on this, I probably wouldn't have messed with it. But number one, it's really tough on the gut. I think it really exacerbated histamine problems for me. I don't really feel like I had many histamine issues until I started to use cholestyramine. So I don't know if it changed something with the gut barrier. It was too harsh. It was detoxing too strong. And that aggravated my mast cells, creating more histamine issues, or what the mechanism was. But I definitely felt that it messed up my gut. Secondly, there's an impact on the mitochondria from cholestyramine. So I think it made my fatigue issues worse. And most people don't mention that. They kind of mention it as this, if you're a Richie Shoemaker trained MD, you know, a lot of these conventional mold doctors, they kind of make fun of natural binders. And natural binders have saved hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cases in my situation, where these people were at the end of their rope and we got them better with natural binders. So this idea that one is better than the other, or that natural compounds can't work, it's simply not true. Cholestyramine, in the beginning though, it did get me out of the hole. I was in a dark place for a while. I had a lot of dizziness and vertigo. And when I started cholestyramine, I almost had instant relief. It's a much stronger binder than something like charcoal. Stronger meaning it's a tighter bond to that toxin, whereas charcoal is kind of a weaker bond. So think of it like a strong magnet versus a weak magnet. So when you're using something like charcoal, it is true that some of the mycotoxins will essentially fall off and get reabsorbed back into the system. And you can have a die-off, or almost like a Herxheimer reaction, from simply binders. And you would think binders are just this perfect benign substance and all it's going to do is pull bad things out of you. But when I was taking 6, 7, 8 charcoal capsules per day just to experiment, I was messed up. I was not feeling well. So that told me, hey, this is not a perfect product. Whereas when I did cholestyramine, it was so strong that I almost felt more clear-headed with the natural binders. So there's a pros and cons list to everything. Do I think it's necessary to get better? No, but cholestyramine apparently is one of the only compounds on the planet to get out non-stick chemicals. So, you know, like the forever chemicals we hear about, it appears that cholestyramine can bind to those and pull those out. So that's kind of cool. So maybe at a minimum, I at least pulled chemicals out of my body that natural compounds wouldn't.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. And I can't say I've had a lot of patients on cholestyramine. Typically, they'll be either on the herbs, like things like bugleweed, motherwort for those with hyperthyroidism, or they'll be on the anti-thyroid medication. But if they can't tolerate the anti-thyroid medication, and let's say the herbs aren't effective, the natural agents aren't effective, if it's a choice between getting their thyroid gland removed or the radioactive iodine or the cholestyramine, I would recommend the cholestyramine. But
Agreed. Well, they probably have mold toxin anyway, so why not give them the cholestyramine, and therefore you're helping thyroid and you're detoxing them. So I think in your case, it'd be a great strategy. And I love that you use and implement motherwort too, because you're one of the few guys out there that really know and talk about motherwort as much as I do. It's one of my favorite herbs. I take it, you know, a few times a week, you know, 5, 10, 15 drops sometimes, because, you know, the stress and the trauma and the grief associated with this whole conversation is significant. You know, we're talking uprooting people from their family homes. We're talking having to sell or remediate or renovate. So you're talking marriage stress, financial stress, right? There's a lot of other collateral damage that happens with this whole conversation. And motherwort is not only a great tool for what you're using in the thyroid cases, but it's amazing for emotional trauma and grief, heart palpitations, AFib, atrial flutter, blood pressure irregularities. So motherwort is a really good ally throughout this process.
Yeah, I agree. It also has some antimicrobial effects as well. So that's cool that you take it on a regular basis. I didn't know that. So
yeah,
thanks for sharing. And I know there's so much more we could cover, but I know you got to run soon. So before we wrap it up, is there anything burning in you that you want to say? Or did you want to just give like a summary of someone thinks they're suspecting they might have a mold problem? What would be the next steps?
Yeah, my advice would be if you haven't done some good labs, so test your home and test your body yet, then that would be a great investment. Because if you wait until you get the cancer diagnosis or the Alzheimer's diagnosis or some other really scary thing that's going to have a lot of pharmaceutical interventions and potentially surgeries and all of that, I mean, you can really save yourself from some of that if you get your body clean and you get these toxins out. This is not a rare situation. This is an extremely common situation, and I bet a large amount of money the folks listening and or their family members, their parents, their children, their grandchildren are probably walking around with mold toxin in them, because the average person spends roughly 95% of their time indoors in the modern world versus just a short time ago in the 1800s when we were all farmers, we were outside all day. So even if the old farmhouse was moldy, which it was probably less moldy because they use plaster and not drywall with paper backing. So the housing materials have changed. How tight our homes are have changed. So there's a lot of things that have happened in a very, very short amount of time in terms of building technology that have made us more prone to having mold issues. And I encourage people to remember that this is a multi-generational problem. I've tested grandma, daughter, granddaughter, and I've seen it through the family line. So if you're one of those people that walks around saying, hey, mental illness runs in the family, well, yeah, maybe you're indicating that there's mold illness running in the family. And that's why you're all chronically fatigued, obese, depressed, anxious, etc. Of course, nutrition plays a role, but I've seen these families where they're all crazy. Mold causes rage. So if the kid's having behavioral issues, the mom is on an antidepressant, the grandma had a nervous breakdown, like these are the things you have to look for in your workup with people to really kind of plot the dots here and go, oh, grandma was nuts, mom's nuts, kids are nuts. Okay, we got to figure this out. And if you dig deep enough, and you'll spend maybe a couple $1,000 to do a really good workup on yourself, but if you do this, you're going to save yourself massive suffering. You're potentially going to save your marriage if your marriage isn't good. You're going to save the money from not having to send your kid off to behavioral therapy and speech therapy and occupational therapy and all these other interventions that you'll try to do to mitigate the toxicity, because the speech can be affected in children as well. And that's something that most practitioners don't recognize. There's also a big link, and that's why you and I love and have used Great Plains, now Mosaic, because of the link between autism spectrum issues and mold toxin. And any child who's on the spectrum at any level, any degree of severity, we're going to run chemicals and mold toxin. And guess what? We're going to find it 99 out of 100 times in these kids. So this is something that I hope will become more popular and mainstream. But at this time, there's very few people talking about this, and even less pediatricians talking about this. Even I know some really good functional pediatricians, and even them are not really doing the work that I'm doing with this kind of stuff. So that's why I've built up and had to become an expert at kids, mainly because I have three of my own, but also because who else is going to save the kids? At the current rate of toxicity that I'm seeing, and the current rate of fatigue and behavioral issues and lack of motivation and all that, I really don't know how society will continue to function if we don't start getting people healthier. Because who's going to be the garbage man? If everyone's too tired to pick up a garbage can and throw it in the back of the truck and drive away, who? Who is going to take care of society? How is society going to continue to run if our health is so chronically bad like this? So we've got a mess on our hands. And I hope that people like you and I can put a dent in it, but we need others out there. So if you are a parent and you need help, reach out and let's help your family. And if you're a practitioner, then I would encourage you to learn about this stuff. And if you're interested, I have functional medicine training courses that people can take. I have over 1,200 students in there, and a lot of them are practitioners. It's maybe an 80-20 split, so maybe 80% health seeker, 20% practitioner. But the big flagship one that I have is called Better Belly. And this is a course where I've taken a lot of case studies, and we've put those into an easy to understand and digest format. I'll show you just real quick if people want to check it out. And also, we could probably get a coupon code for your audience. So if people want to get a better deal on it, they can. This is a fraction of the cost of one semester of college, and you're going to learn way more than you will in college, I promise. But this course here, I have a full curriculum. It's over 53 lessons, anything from ulcerative colitis and Crohn's, IBS, Candida, more Candida protocols, stomach acid. We talk about SIBO and SIFO, H. pylori, Clostridia, heart issues and H. pylori, parasites. And then I have all these calls where I'm on the call with my clients, and you can kind of listen to what the clients are saying. A histamine intolerance case study. We go into lab testing. We go into supplements. I got some mold experts here. This is a professional mold inspector. This guy here owns a mold testing company. So here's a talk I gave on how mycotoxins create all these issues. I have a presentation on how to improve your home health. So there's a lot of stuff. And I'm motivated and really hungry to get this out. So I'm going to keep charging full speed ahead. And I appreciate our time together. It's been great.
Yeah, same here, Evan. Can you verbally say, even though you just showed that, can you verbally say the website? Where can people sign up for the Better Belly program, or if they want to work with you one-on-one, as well as check out your podcast?
Sure. Thanks so much. Yeah, it's evanbrand.com. So E-V-A-N brand, like brand name, B-R-A-N-D, evanbrand.com. Everything's there. And yeah, you can check out the podcast too. We're going to get you on there as well. So you'll see Eric's pretty face on the podcast soon. And it's all free. The podcast is all free. The courses are paid, but the podcast is absolutely free. And consultations, I have me, and then I have another functional practitioner on my team. So if you all need help, then we'll be here.
All right. Awesome. Well, thanks, Evan. Definitely we'll put those links in the show notes, and great chatting with you. Definitely check out Evan's podcast, look into his Better Belly course, or if you want to set up a consultation with Evan, definitely contact him and his team. And again, thank you so much for this conversation. I learned a lot as well.
Thanks for having me, man.